Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 352, titled Forward into the Past, Part 2. This is being recorded on March 24th of 2002. We're going to be continuing a line of discussion begun in side one. Key names to remember: Ahmed Huber, a Swiss-born Islamo-fascist and, quote, neo-unquote Nazi. Al-Taqwa, both names we've spoken about many times in the past. A name we've spoken about still more often in the past, that of François Genoux. The connections between these were explained at considerable length in the first half of this broadcast. I've talked about Huber and Al-Taqwa in, for the record, 335, 336, 338, 340, 41, 42, 43, 44, 50, and 51. We've spoken about Genoux in many programs, including A Forward into the Past, Part 1, recorded on October 28th of 2001. That's For the Record 333. We came back to him in program number 341, 342, 343, 4, and in particular in number 350. So keep in mind these names. One of the points that I'm going to review from previous broadcasts concerns the line of heritage from the aforementioned François Genoux, a key operative on behalf of the Third Reich in its World War II and pre-World War II overground phases and the post-World War II underground phase. Bear in mind Genoux's sponsorship of Carlos the Jackal, including in particular after Carlos was arrested in Sudan in 1994. Bear in mind also that a Genoux protege, Jacques Vergès, who represented Klaus Barbie, had also represented Carlos the Jackal. So bear in mind the heritage from François Genoux to Carlos the Jackal and to Jacques Vergès. We're going to take a look now at who was representing Carlos Moussaoui, the so-called 20th hijacker in France. That is to say, who is his French counsel. Reviewing now from For the Record program number 341, LA Times, Thursday, December 13th of 2001, an article by David Zucchino, Dateline Narbonne, France. Quote, it's as if he had died, unquote, mother of suspects says. This refers to Zacharias Moussaoui. Skipping down, Zacharias Moussaoui is represented in France by Isabelle Couton-Père, who is well known for representing and later promising to marry Ilich Ramirez Sanchez, better known as Carlos the Jackal. Again, Carlos, a protege of, among others, François Genoux, and represented by, among others, Jacques Vergès, who also represented Klaus Barbie. Reviewing from For the Record 344, New York Times, Saturday, January 12th of 2002, Suzanne Daly wrote the following article. This is datelined Paris and headlined Bucking the Court Again to Marry the Jackal. It's about the aforementioned Isabelle Couton-Père, who is the French counsel, or a French counsel, for Zacharias Moussaoui. Speaking of Mrs. Couton-Père, the future Mrs. Carlos, but in 1981 she was taken under the wing of Jacques Vergès, a legendary defender of celebrity villains. Her methods have included the so-called rupture tactics Mr. Vergès became famous for, treating a trial like a political lynching, turning her back on judges, and sometimes walking out. She's going to be representing Zacharias Moussaoui, and she is one of the political heirs to the Genoux, Vergès, Carlos the Jackal, Al-Taqwa heritage. A very important article about Al-Taqwa, about Ahmed Huber, about the connections between Al-Taqwa and Osama bin Laden's milieu, that appeared in Newsweek magazine's issue of March 25th of 2002. This particular article is by Mark Hosenball, H-O-S-E-N-B-A-L-L. He was assisted by Kevin Perino, P-E-R-A-I-N-O, and Catherine Skip, S-K-I-P-P. The article is titled Terror's Cash Flow. It's subtitled, Is Al-Taqwa a Shadowy Financial Network, a Secret Money Machine for Osama bin Laden? And some of the key names to remember here, and this supplements the March 12th article from the Chronicle. Of course, Ahmed Huber. François Genoux is not mentioned in this article, but note Al-Taqwa note a number of elements here. As we talked about in the March 12th Chronicle article, François Genoux helped pay for the Ayatollah Khomeini's exile in France, or he helped to finance Khomeini when he was in exile in France. In this article, we're going to talk about the fact that Huber was actually invited to appear at a gathering by the feet of the Ayatollah Khomeini. The admiration of Huber for Khomeini was discussed in past programs about Huber. Note that among the other recipients of Huber's wisdom, the Nation of Islam, an African-American Islamo-fascist organization, or what I would describe as an Islamo-fascist organization, they have, as I said, been among the recipients of the wisdom of Ahmed Huber. Note also connections between the Al-Taqwa milieu and Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman. We've talked about those in the past. And in particular, note indications here, as testified to on the floor of Congress, that Al-Taqwa, in addition to helping finance bin Laden before September 11th, was allegedly involved in financing bin Laden after September 11th. The Nassau Bahamas branch of Al-Taqwa, financed in part by six members of the bin Laden family, who, as we've seen in the past in past programs, contrary to popular opinion and publicized opinion, they had not severed connections with Osama. Terrorist Cash Flow by Mark Hosenball, with assistance from Mr. Pereno and Ms. Skip, Newsweek 325, 2002. In neo-Nazi circles, 74-year-old Albert Huber is something of a celebrity. The retired Swiss journalist gives talks to far-right groups around the world, condemning Zionists and arguing that the Holocaust was exaggerated. Over the past two decades, he made regular trips to the United States, lecturing at Aryan Youth and Nation of Islam meetings. Huber's rants are especially popular among radical Muslims. Born a Christian, the blue-eyed, silver-haired Huber converted to Islam in the 1960s. He now calls himself Ahmad and preaches that neo-Nazis and Muslims should join ranks to defeat Israel. Quote, "The United States is now controlled by a small Jewish faction," unquote, he says, again quoting, "We are making a link between Islamic movements and the new right in Europe," unquote. The late Iranian dictator Ayatollah Khomeini was so impressed with Huber's theories that he was once invited to sit at his feet at a gathering in Tehran. Note, as we discussed in the first half of the program, Khomeini's stay in exile in France financed by François Genoux. Continuing. More recently, Huber says he has been approached at Islamic conferences by people introduced as representatives of Osama bin Laden. Garrulous and surprisingly friendly, Huber is unapologetic about the attention bin Laden's supporters give him. But despite his extreme beliefs, he described the September 11th attacks as, quote, "counter-terror against American-Israeli terror," unquote. He claims he has no personal ties to terrorists. International investigators think otherwise. Late last year, the United States put him on a list of people suspected of financing terrorism. Huber served on the board of Al-Taqwa, a shadowy financial network that they say hid money for bin Laden and other international terrorists and helped to fund their operations. Investigators on bin Laden's trail had known of Al-Taqwa's existence for years, but the group's maze-like structure made it hard to track, and the feds considered it a low priority. Not anymore. Within hours of the September 11th attacks, a senior official told Newsweek, President George W. Bush ordered his national security team to seize bin Laden's cash. Quote, "I want their money," the president demanded. "I want it now. I want to hurt them," unquote. In November, the Treasury Department froze the assets of Al-Taqwa, Huber, and most of the network's other leaders. Shortly thereafter, it went into liquidation. Taqwa officials strongly deny that they have any connection with terrorists, but after months of probing, the feds say they have evidence that Al-Taqwa provided support to bin Laden both before and after September 11th. A Newsweek investigation, including interviews with U.S. and European law enforcement agents and top Al-Taqwa officials, reveals how bin Laden's suspected bankers kept the cash flowing and how they managed to stay for so long beneath the radar. Al-Taqwa, which means fear of God, was launched in the late 1980s by leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, a secret society devoted to the creation of a worldwide Islamic government. By the way, and among other programs, For the Record 343 and in number 351, we dealt with the overtly, explicitly fascist heritage of the Muslim Brotherhood. It is why I have referred to that organization and related elements as Islamo-fascist. Again, not to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist, but rather what we've been dealing with in connection with September 11th is a theocratic fascistic manifestation of Islam that has exerted a profound influence in the Muslim world. I think perhaps the fate of humanity will depend on the dissociation of the world's Muslims from that fascistic element within it, within Islam. Continuing, speaking of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Brotherhood wanted to create a financial institution in which devout Muslims could invest their money. It would operate under strict Islamic law, which prohibits banks from charging interest. But investigators believe that the convoluted structure of Al-Taqwa made it easy to use as a money laundering mechanism. Al-Taqwa had no offices. The entire operation consisted of four men working at computers in a small apartment in Lugano, Switzerland. Lugano, which sits near the Italian border, is a kind of Alpine Tijuana, well known as a haven for tax evaders as well as money launderers. By the way, it's also the financial epicenter for Heinrich Thyssen-Born Mises, the heir to one of the heirs to the Thyssen fortune and a primary operative of the Bormann organization. Al-Taqwa's founders made other suspicious moves, registering the network as an offshore bank in the Bahamas, where secrecy laws would protect transactions from prying investigators. Back in Switzerland, the Bahamian license allowed Taqwa bosses to open commercial, quote, correspondent, unquote, accounts with established European banks, paying the larger institutions fees to make cash transfers around the world for them without calling attention to themselves. All are classic money laundering techniques, investigators say. Intelligence sources say they weren't aware of Al-Taqwa's activities until the mid-1990s, when the Egyptians began investigating possible terrorist links to one of Taqwa's founders and shareholders, a wealthy Swiss resident named Ahmed Idris Nasreddin. Born in Eritrea, the 73-year-old Nasreddin claims to be a descendant of African royalty. In the early 1990s, he helped create and finance the Islamic Cultural Institute of Milan, a mosque located just over the Italian border from Lugano. European intelligence agencies had begun to suspect that the Cultural Institute was a recruiting and supply center for Al-Qaeda and other terror groups. By the way, I would note that Youssef Nada, the founder of Al-Taqwa, was, according to the book Dollars for Terror, a young employee not only of the Muslim Brotherhood, but also of the Abwehr, German military intelligence during World War II, that run by Admiral Wilhelm Canaris. I noted in rereading aloud this particular article that Mr. Nasreddin was born in Eritrea, and he's 73 years old. Eritrea was an Italian colony. It is part of what used to be Ethiopia, and it was Eritrea which served as the pretext for Mussolini's invasion of Ethiopia in the mid-1930s, and it served not only as the pretext for Mussolini's invasion of Ethiopia, but also as the geographical base. Raises some interesting questions about the possible heritage of Mr. Nasreddin. How far back do some of these fascist connections go? Continuing, note here that the Cultural Institute of the Islamic Cultural Institute of Milan, a mosque located just over the Italian border from Lugano, associated with Nasreddin, was also associated with the milieu of Sheikh Rahman. Continuing, the center's late imam, Anwar Shaban, was a follower of Omar Abdel Rahman, the blind Egyptian cleric, now in a U.S. prison for his role in plotting to blow up New York landmarks. Qaeda terrorists involved in both the 1998 U.S. embassy bombings in Africa and the failed Millennium bombing plot hung out at the Milan Center, law enforcement officials say. The U.S. Treasury Department describes the mosque as, quote, the main Al-Qaeda station house in Europe. It is used to facilitate the movement of weapons, men, and money across the world, unquote. Nasruddin could not be reached. His lawyer, P.F. Barchi, or Barchi, B-A-R-C-H-I, says that Egyptian Secret Service agents warned Nasruddin in the mid-1990s about possible terrorist, quote, problems, unquote, with the center. Al-Taqwa's longtime chairman, an Egyptian expatriate and Muslim Brotherhood member named Youssef Nada, told Newsweek that Nasruddin would never get involved with terrorists. Still, he says, he warned Nasruddin to, quote, be more cautious, unquote. Barchi says his client only made, quote, charity, unquote, donations to support the center's worshippers, paying rent and utilities, and that he has nothing to do with terrorism. Nasruddin's links to the Milan Center made investigators curious about the network's other potential ties to terrorists. By the late 1990s, intelligence agencies on both sides of the Atlantic were probing Al-Taqwa. When Swiss regulators began questioning its leaders, Al-Taqwa unsuccessfully attempted to placate them by appointing Huber, a Swiss native, to its Swiss board of directors. Investigators began to take a harder look at Al-Taqwa after the embassy bombings. Sources say U.S. intelligence tracked telephone contacts between Al-Taqwa and members of bin Laden's inner circle. Note here, by the way, the connections between Al-Taqwa, or the alleged connections here between Al-Taqwa and the U.S. embassy bombings in 1998. Time permitting, we're going to return briefly to that subject later in the program. Beginning again, investigators began to take a harder look at Al-Taqwa after the embassy bombings. Sources say U.S. intelligence tracked telephone contacts between Al-Taqwa and members of bin Laden's inner circle. Qaeda operatives would call Taqwa representatives in the Bahamas as they moved around the world. Still, the network's complex structure made it difficult to prove how money changed hands, and the investigation stalled. Under U.S. pressure, the Bahamian government revoked Al-Taqwa's license last spring. Treasury officials say the network continued to do business anyway. I would add that was under the rubric of Nada management. Continuing. But after Bush's order to roll up bin Laden's money network, European investigators swept in on Al-Taqwa, searching Huber's and Nada's homes and freezing their assets. Nasruddin's money was not frozen. The Swiss, ever protective of their renowned status as an anonymous banking haven, at first seemed reluctant to go after Al-Taqwa. But after a private meeting with Attorney General John Ashcroft in Washington earlier this month, Switzerland's chief prosecutor, Valentin Rorschacher, told Newsweek his government is now conducting a vigorous criminal investigation. U.S. officials have been much more blunt about their suspicions. Testifying before Congress in February, Jaime Zarate, a senior Treasury official, said Al-Taqwa's connections to terrorists go back at least 5 years. Zarate told lawmakers that the United States learned in 1997 that the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas had transferred $60 million into Al-Taqwa accounts. Zarate also testified that intelligence agencies have evidence that, quote, as of late September 2001, unquote, after the attacks, again quoting, bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda organization received financial assistance from Al-Taqwa's chairman, unquote, though he gave no details about what the money might have been used for. Nasruddin, Huber, and Nada all deny laundering money and any involvement of any kind with terrorists, and prosecutors don't have enough evidence to make a criminal case against them. At least not yet. Prosecutors say they are now piecing together thousands of pages of documents seized in raids on the bank and its leaders, searching for a paper trail between the bankers and bin Laden. Prosecutors concede that Al-Taqwa may have been just one of Al-Qaeda's many sources of clandestine funds. If so, closing its doors could be an important step in slowing bin Laden's river of cash to just a trickle. By the way, again, note allegations that Al-Taqwa had been involved with financing bin Laden after September 11th. Note also that the difference between being involved with terrorism, being an intelligence service knowing that, and being able to prove that in a court of law are two different things and not necessarily equivalent. That is one of the key counterintelligence and also civil rights issues, or it is on that axis, pun intended, that many of these issues turn. And please note the distinction between reality and provable legal reality. Research credit on the following and transcription credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This sharp-eared and sharp-eyed listener got this from NPR's All Things Considered on March 21st of 2002. That was a Thursday. You can hear this very important segment at the NPR website of www.npr.org. This is an interview by Leanne Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, with Larry Johnson, a former State Department and CIA counterterrorism official and now the CEO of Berg Associates. This is titled by NPR, Reemerging Terror Groups, and it deals with attacks allegedly conducted by both the Red Brigades and the Sendero Luminoso in Italy and Peru, respectively. Leanne Hansen. As we just heard, the leaders of the Shining Path and Tupac Amaru groups deny that they were behind last night's car bombing in Lima, but some U.S. officials today hinted they think the Shining Path probably was responsible, and President Bush indicated today that he believes that the group is on the upsurge. But the Shining Path was supposed to have been crushed a decade ago, and that's not the only guerrilla group that may be getting an encore. In Italy this week, the Red Brigades claimed responsibility for the murder of a key government advisor. The Red Brigades carried out a series of political assassinations in the 1970s and 80s, and then disappeared until apparently this week. Larry Johnson was the deputy director of the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department. Before that, he worked for the CIA. He's now CEO of Berg Associates. He joins us now on the phone. Leanne Hansen. Mr. Johnson, what are we seeing here, do you think? First of all, with someone like Shining Path, is this a second generation? Larry Johnson. I'd be cautious jumping to the conclusion that Shining Path has somehow managed to regenerate themselves and emerge. I think we're going to have to look at some ties between the radical Islamic groups that are in Latin America and the radical right that's in Latin America as well. For starters, for Shining Path, they're bound by one common theme, that is to say, the Islamists and radical right, which is hatred of Jews, and we have to look at it in the context of this other conflict in terrorism that's underway in Afghanistan and the Philippines. Leanne Hansen. So, in other words, it might be new people, old name, unquote. Larry Johnson. Well, actually, quote, old name, people that we've known in other circumstances who aren't using their true name, unquote. And I would say the same thing extends to the Red Brigades in Italy. That the communists of the world are now uniting again, unquote, I think is laughable. But one other player that we have over in the Middle East that has been a safe haven for groups, not only the Red Brigades, Red Army faction, and Japanese Red Army, Syria. And Syria is up to its elbows in the Bekaa Valley in its support for Hezbollah, which is conducting operations against Israel right now. Leanne Hansen. Can you give us an idea of the why, the rationale behind the people that are, you're saying, are behind Shining Path? I mean, why would people in the mountains of Peru hate Jews? Larry Johnson. Well, it's not the people in the mountains. I mean, I've had two experiences in the last 6 months, one involved with the Philippines, one involved with Argentina, people who do not know each other, and they both said the same thing to me, and I had independent evidence corroborating it. And it's this. That the groups that you would think that would not normally work together, such as neo-Nazis in the United States, with these radical Islamic extremists, that because, you know, the neo-Nazis' idea of Aryan purity would somehow be, it doesn't seem consistent with people who are Semitic, albeit of Arab descent. Nonetheless, this hatred of Jews you find around the world, this pernicious blood libel, this notion that, you know, Jews steal the blood of children and make pastries, that came out last week in Saudi Arabia. I've had many educated Argentines sit down and try to discuss with me that the Protocols of the Elders of Zion was a map of what the Jews wanted to do to take over Argentina. This perception of Jewish control of the financial institutions of the media is really prevalent in many parts of the world. And you find people who are elites, particularly if you go into Peru, there are elements within the military forces, within the intelligence community, that have their own interest in opposing both U.S. presence there, as well as trying to shift the blame onto, say, Sendero Luminoso. So I would vote for caution before leaping to conclusions that it is Sendero, unquote, that it isn't Sendero, unquote. The one thing I am certain of, it's with the assistance of some group outside of Peru. This is not internal. This is not homegrown. Leanne Hansen, Larry Johnson, thanks a lot. Larry Johnson, sorry to cheer you up. Leanne Hansen closes. Larry Johnson was the Deputy Director of the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department and with the CIA. Many elements in common here. First of all, Philippines and Argentina, I've noted in For the Record program number 328 and in 330 and 336. One of the common elements there, Manzar El-Kassar, and also the Oklahoma City bombing. Evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Ramzi Youssef and allegedly Terry Nichols in the Philippines. Also to Manzar El-Kassar, the AMIA and Israeli embassy bombings in Argentina. Manzar El-Kassar, in turn, running back to Syria. One of bin Laden's wives associated with the Alawite sect that runs Syria to a large extent and runs the Syrian intelligence services. Another element in common, Red Brigades, founded in part by Licio Gelli, head of the P2 Lodge, and Stefano Della Chiai, one of the authors of The Strategy of Tension. He was associated with the P2 and with the Red Brigades. He also, as we looked at in RFA 19, was associated with Sendero Luminoso, as well as a member of Klaus Barbie's Fiancés of Death paramilitary Nazi organization in Bolivia. Also, please note Silvio Berlusconi, a member of the P2. There are links between the Gulf Office and Operation Clean Hands and Al-Taqwa and Silvio Berlusconi and Yosef Nada and many of the elements that we've discussed that in For the Record program 351. There are other links as well, but in order to flesh those out, you're going to want to consult with the various web addresses that are available. And please note that both audio files and printed descriptions of these programs are to be distributed by people who are online. Please do everything you can to distribute both types of files as far and wide as possible. The programs I've recorded over the years are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Email mail at spitfirelist1word.com. Visit their website at www.spitfirelist.com. By the time you hear this program, there will be a detailed annotated description of the program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Be sure to follow the links in that description to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which have virtually the entire For the Record series available for download and or streaming on Real Audio. The first airing of each For the Record program takes place at 9 p.m. on Monday night on KKUP. Visit their website for instructions on how to listen at www.kkup.com. This concludes For the Record program number 352, Side B, Forward into the Past, Part 2, being recorded on March 24th of the year 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.